Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, everybody out there. How's it going? This is Brian with Foreclosure Help. Hope all is well today. It's pretty good here today. Had a rough start, but it's Friday, and that means nobody's home. Everybody is out playing and partying, just depending on what kind of states you're, part of the states you're in. At least those guys over in New York are probably already getting their groove on over there in New York. I knew I would be if I was them. It's early enough, or late enough for them to start. So, here, and we're not going to get to party too much because there's a storm going on, a nice electrical storm. So this is not exactly something I'd like to have happening at the moment, considering it's the weekend. They were announcing all kinds of great weather, 85 degrees and sunny and blah, 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 blah. And here we are stuck with, all kinds of mayhem and crappy electrical storms. So I may be forced to having to shut the show down early because of it. So I'm not sitting on my computer here getting fried or zapped every time I make a move, to get something done. So pretty good day. Foreclosures are obviously still happening all over the place. Nothing's slowed down. Banks are still pulling their usual. There was a post the other day that I seen. Our buddy Yola handed or posted over to me about how employment rate is back up. I about died when I seen that one. I really wanted to just die when I seen that, but how, you know, apparently unemployment or the employment is back up. And, you know, functioning. But anyway, there's nobody here listening, so I'm going to play another little tune here and see what happens. See if anybody shows up and see how it goes. Otherwise, I might just cut the show early. I'm going to put a new twist on my show for a little bit of time since I'm just having a good old time with this, so I'm not going to do the typical normal show as I would usually do. But we have a call in, so let's see what's happening here. Hello?
Is this Brian?
It is Brian.
Oh, who have I got? This is Linda in California.
Oh, wow. Hey, Linda. It's Brian on the air, man.
I thought so. I couldn't tell. I'm out here in the street again. We've got about 60 people, all seniors with their signs. People are honking. It's Friday night, a little after 5 here, you know, on the good old left coast.
Right on. You guys having fun out there?
Yeah, we've been doing this campaign for just about a year now. So we're coming up to that June 5th primary, and that's what we're trying to get people to vote no on this proposition. But it's pretty cool. We've got the streets pretty well lined right now where I'm at.
Oh, very cool. Oh,
so anyway, I can't tell who's in the chat room because I am not near our computer.
Yeah, it's just me, actually. Actually, it's you and me, girl. That's what it is.
Oh,
I was.
There's no one.
I was just kinda,
okay.
Yeah, I was just kind of hanging in the chat room, and then I was, you know, had the opening tracks going. I was waiting for to see if anybody was going to show in. So I put, you know, I had the opening track playing, and then I started gabbing for a minute, and then I came up with this really crazy hook for a show. So I was playing the Doobie Brothers, and then it just ended. And then I was making a comment about my idea about the show, what I'm going to do for this, you know, the remainder of the show, since nobody, you know, it's Friday and everybody's out getting.
I know. And plus it's Memorial Weekend, I know.
Right. So I figured, well, I'm going to put a hook on the show that nobody's going to expect at all. And then as I was talking about that, you called, so I figured I'd check and see who it was. I was like, ooh. And I kind of recognized the number, sort of. I wasn't real positive, but either way, it was a call, and I was excited.
Anyway, so we're going to be out here for another hour and a half, so I'm going to let you go, and I pray somebody calls into your show. So,
mm-hmm. Well, good luck out there. Have fun. Let me know how it goes. Keep us updated.
Okay, we will. I'll try to post pictures. I'm going to get some. All right.
All right. Take it easy.
Talk to you later.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Well, I accidentally got hung up on, or I hung up on myself, actually. So that was just miraculous. Anyway, so let's not try to do that twice, right? Anyhow, so what I'm looking to do is I'm going to give a little bit of information and here and there, and then kind of, you know, play a tune or two. So I'm kind of looking to see what here, what kind of music we got going on here, because I know we have a lot of great tunes up on this roster here, and all kinds of great selections of classic hits and oldies. Remember those KTEL Presents albums? KTEL Presents Classic Rock from the 80s. Oh, hey, we got Alabama. All right. So anyway, so I've been doing some reports now, and with the assistance of a friend of ours, had picked up on some particular California laws banks may be in violation against if they are doing a foreclosure against your property. So one of the codes based out of California, the wonderful state of California, Fraudifornia. Yeah. Anyway, California, being one of the bigger hit states with foreclosures, well, everybody's being beat up, but, you know, California, Nevada, Florida, and Illinois and Michigan, everybody's getting it pretty bad with Arizona as well. But they're kind of the top 10 list. So anyway, so here's one of the codes for California. That's basically it's California Business and Professional Codes 10240-10248. It states that every real estate broker, upon acting within the meaning of Subdivision D of Section 101.31. who negotiates a loan to be secured directly or collaterally by a lien on real property shall, within 3 business days after receipt of a complete written loan application, or before the borrower becomes obligated on the note, whichever is earlier, caused to be delivered to the borrower a statement in writing containing all the information required by Section 10241. It shall be personally signed by the borrower and by the real estate broker negotiating the loan, or by a real estate licensee acting for the broker in negotiating the loan. When so executed, an exact copy thereof shall be delivered to the borrower at the time of its execution. The real estate broker negotiating the loan shall retain on file for a period of 3 years a true and correct copy of the statement as signed by the borrower. No real estate licensee shall permit the statement to be signed by a borrower if any information required by Section 10241 is omitted. Here's Section 12041. The statement required by Section 10240, the form of which shall be approved by the commissioner, shall set forth separately the following items: the estimated maximum cost and expense of making a loan, which are to be paid by the borrower, including but not limited to the following: appraisal fees, escrow fees, title charges, notary fees, recording fees, credit investigation fees. So, that's pretty good stuff. That means they have to follow those, pretty much those codes to exact, and are allowed to charge you for those specific fees. Anything outside that could be a lot of trouble, which they usually try to do, which is something that needs to be investigated by your attorney if you have one and are in a foreclosure position. Let's see. So in California, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency Guidance Letter, AL2003-2, a departure from fundamental principles of loan underwriting generally forms the basis of abusive lending. Lending without a determination that a borrower can reasonably be expected to repay the loan from resources other than collateral securing the loan, and relying instead on the foreclosure value of the borrower's collateral to recover principal, interest, and fees. A national bank that makes a loan to a consumer based predominantly on the liquidation value of the borrower's collateral rather than a determination of the borrower's repayment ability, including current and expected income, current obligations, employment status, and other relevant financial resources, is engaging in a fraudulently unsafe and unsound banking practice that is inconsistent with the established lending standards. 7. This practice not only increases the risk to the bank that the loan will default, but may also increase the bank's potential loss exposure upon default. So, you know, there's a lot of heck there. And then here's another a note from them, from the comptroller as well in California, OCC, Office of the Comptroller of the Currency Guidance Letter, AL2003-3. It's good stuff. The OCC believes that a fundamental characteristic of predatory lending is the provision of credit to borrowers who simply cannot afford the credit on the terms being offered. Typically, such credit is underwritten predominantly on the basis of the liquidation value of the collateral, without regard to the borrower's ability to pay the service and repay the loan according to its terms, absent resorting to that collateral. When a loan has been made based on the foreclosure value of the collateral rather than on determination that the borrower has the capacity to make the scheduled payments in accordance with the terms of the loan, the lender is effectively relying on its ability to seize the borrower's equity in the collateral to satisfy the obligation, including accrued interest, and to recover the typically high fees associated with such credits. Predatory and abusive loans originated through brokers or by third-party lenders also present a wide range of heightened legal risk for national banks and could subject them to both supervisory action and civil liability. For example, borrowers victimized by oppressive loan terms or other unscrupulous conduct of a mortgage broker or loan originator may have remedies against the ultimate creditor under common law theories of fraud or unconscionability. I could never pronounce that word. In addition, predatory loans originated through mortgage brokers or purchased from third-party lenders may subject national banks to liability or supervisory action under a wide range of federal consumer protection laws. For example, in a typical mortgage broker transaction, the loan will be closed in the name of the bank as the initial creditor, unless the bank generally will have direct liability for any violations of law committed in connection with the loan. In addition, the bank could be liable under agency common enterprise or other theories for violations committed by the Estate Settlement Procedures Act, called RESPA, basically. For violations it is deemed to commit in conjunction with the broker, even in table-funded or purchase transactions, a bank may have liability for violations of law as a successor or assignee of the original creditor. So that means banks just can't go around handing loans without inspecting and checking on whether or not you can really truly afford them. You have to, you know, make sure that you have the financial abilities and means to actually repay the loan. So when they were handing all these loans out and stuff like that, which actually part of this ties into there's a couple of section parts of the Office of Comptroller and Currency Guidelines letter here it all pertains to, you know, banks having an obligation to protect the consumer. And a lot of people are trying to question, well, do they really have that right? Do they really have a, you know, obligation to protect the consumer? Well, yes. Yes, they do. And this is kind of some of the proof that they have. So anyway, so after that little bit of information, I'm going to play a little tune here and then come running back in. But we have a guest here as well, so welcome, guest. Hope you hang around for a little bit. I'm about to play a tune and then come back and give some more info. If not, otherwise, if you're bored, you can feel free to call in at any time.
If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana man. So wrong enough that both are faded love and let's all dance. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. I remember down in Houston, we were putting on a show, when a cowboy in the back stood up and yelled, "Cotton Eye Joe!" He said, "We love what you're doing, boys, don't get us wrong. There's just something missing in your song. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana man. So rousing up that both of faded love and let's all dance. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. cowboy hats on straight. Them Texans raised the roof when Jeff opened up his case. You say y'all all want a two-step. You say you want a do-si-do. Well, here's your fiddling song before we go. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana man. So rosin up that bow for faded love and let's all dance. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. That lead guitar is hot, but not for Louisiana man. So rosin up that bow for faded love and let's all dance. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band. If you're gonna play in Texas, you gotta have a fiddle in the band.
Hello, we're back again. Kind of hanging here. Can you hear the music still? Is it still playing for you, Yola? I wasn't sure. But anyway, I hope it sounds all right. So anyway, I got this little ordeal while I'm processing tonight's show. Since there's only now two of us hanging out here doing this, listening, because it's the weekend and Memorial weekend, and of course nobody's home. So we're going to, or I'm going to, you know, give some legal guru advice here, or not advice, but kind of state some facts and features and things, and play a tune or two. So anyway, I'm doing some stuff in California because California is getting beat up pretty good. So I discovered through some friends various California real estate laws and things like that. So it's really cool that we were shared this info and that sort of stuff. So I'm going to tell it like it is today because something to do and a tasty way to do it, I guess. So anyway, one of the codes from California is called the California Unfair Competition Law. California Business and Professions Code 17200. And hey, we got, you know, I was just looking through the, not that I, you know, it's kind of like I should looking at the song list on here. We got some really great songs here on the list. I was trying to pick my next tune that I was going to play while I was talking, and I just happened to notice we've got some good stuff here. So anyway, so California Unfair Competition Law, or California, also known as California Business and Professions Code 17200, is used in this chapter. Unfair competition shall mean and include any unlawful, unfair, or fraudulent business act or practice, and unfair, deceptive, untrue or misleading advertising in any act prohibited by Chapter 1, commencing with Section 17500 of Part 3 of Division 7 of the Business and Professions Code. Man, you know, they get into those, you know, Part 3, Subsection 7, Article 6-3, part of, you know, they break it down like that. It just, how do they expect people to memorize this stuff? But anyway, so again, I'll read that. It's the California Business and Profession Code, or California Unfair Competition Law, California Business and Professions Code 17200 states, as used in this chapter, unfair competition shall mean and include any unlawful, unfair, or fraudulent business act or practice and unfair, deceptive, untrue, or misleading advertising and any act prohibited by Chapter 1, commencing with Section 17500 of Part 3 of Division 7 of the Business and Professions Code. So basically, this comes into play really strong because, you know, they were handing out loans and mortgages to people like, you know, candy. Didn't matter whether you could afford them or not. They were committing all kinds of, you know, heinous activities and just handing out loans to whoever they could to just get them. So they were, you know, breaking these laws all over the place. So it's a really, really a bad thing to be doing, but they did it. So also California unconstitutionality law. A court has the power to refuse to enforce a contract or clause in a contract that is unconscionable when, that is the word, I believe it's unconscionable when made so it's unconscionable when made chapter 1670.5A and 1770S, which I'm not sure if that's subsection 1770. And then there's also California rescission law. I love this one. This one's, you know, because me and fraud, you know, how I get on fraud, really happy. Especially when you can pounce the crap out of them with RICO statute violations. Speaking of which, I'll get into a story about that today. So California rescission law for fraud, mistake, undue influence, breach, and illegality. If the buyer state, and this is California law, if the buyer's consent to a contract was induced by the seller's fraud, was given to, or was given by mistake, or under duress, menace, or undue influence, the buyer can elect to rescind the contract. So that means, well, I'm not done actually, I got to finish this. So again, if the buyer's consent to a contract was induced by the seller's fraud, or was given by mistake, or under duress, menace, or undue influence, the buyer can elect to rescind the contract. And this is subsection or California Code 1689B. Causes of action could include lack of due diligence by the lender in providing the loan, lack of good faith and fair dealings by the lender, fiduciary duty. Fiduciary. I got a friend named Bud, and his last name's Fiducia. Andy Fiducia. And every time I hear that name, I just want to die. So anyway, so causes of action could include lack of due diligence by the lender in approving the loan, lack of good faith and fair dealings by the lender, fiduciary duty by the broker for doing a loan when it could lead to default, unconscious ability by the lender for doing the loan. So basically, under those guidelines, technically, you can rescind a contract. under California law if you find it and you know it. And that's a way out. And then for you to fight and say, hey, you know, once you prove that there's been fraud, that you can actually rescind that contract, in other words, it's null and void. So you'd be able to essentially wipe away your debt, or could possibly wipe away the debt, and sue the bank or wipe away the debt and walk away and just give up the property and go start all over and have possible clean credit and so on. So there's all kinds of great probabilities in that one. So, you know, you can do all kinds of unfactual things with that. So, you know, the thing is when, you know, these banks commit all this fraud on your notes, you know, when you go to get these loans, I mean, there's all kinds of abilities that you have. You should have to really discuss them with your lawyer, but ultimately, you know, me and the crazy man I am, I would go personally for the, you know, full money and just, you know, get the house free and clear if possible. Plus, if you can attribute RICO statute violations for racketeering, you can get them for up to the amount of 3 times the amount of damages. So that's a party in itself. It'd be Memorial Weekend every day, wouldn't it? So anyway, we're going to play another little tune here. Little River Band called, a song by Little River Band called Cold Change. And kind of, you know, see what this one is, because I've never heard this one. So I'm going to give it a whirl, give it a spin, and hang out and see what's going on.
If there's one thing in my life that's missing, it's the time that I spend alone, sailing on the cool and bright clear water. Lots of those friendly people, they're showing me ways to go, but I never want to lose their inspiration. Time for a cool change. I know that it's time for a cool. My life is so prearranged. I know that it's time for a cool change. Well, I was born in the sign of water, and it's there that I feel my best. The albatross and the whales, they are my brothers. Of a special feeling when you're out on the sea alone, staring at the full moon like a lover.
sailing on the cool and bright clear water. It's kind of a special feeling out on the sea alone, staring at the full moon like a lover.
You know, I was just thinking while that song was playing, I wonder if anybody messed up and played music and was singing in the background and forgot to turn their mic off and sounded really funky, like really screechy and terrible. You know what I mean? You know, like singing in a shower, they're back there wailing away and they have the microphone on while, you know, everybody's in the room, you know, in the chat room, laughing their butt off. I bet just somebody's done it. I'd like to hear that. That's good. I'd use it for, like, you know, I'd torture them with it. Like, I'd send them an audio track sample in the email, and then, you know, tell them my silence can be bought. And, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to hear anybody to hear you in action or a reminder of your melodic voice in action. That would be really great. I have to do that one of these days. I'm going to try to really pay attention to see if anybody's in the background belting it out like they, you know how to really get their groove on and really like they think they can, you know, really sing in their back there, causing people, you know, to go sterile almost. Trying to listen to this. You know what? I was just thinking, where's Robert when you need him? You know, usually 9 to 7 other days a week or 6 other days a week, the man's on the air torturing everybody, calling up and giving out his great old American, you know, Jew jokes. And here I'm, Robertless. I'm going to have to get on his butt about that. Boy, he's usually really good for filling in some time. Anyway, well, preach on, Dwayne. Yeah, I can't spell either sometimes. But, you know, either way, I'm in Illinois, Dwayne, just so you were wondering. Anyway, yeah, we're going to torture people by trying to record tracks of them singing to music in the background when they don't realize that they left the microphone on while they're belting it out like they stole it, trying to tell it on the mountain in a soury voice. So, yeah. Good old Illinois, Dwayne, the right to screw you state. So anyway, hey, Oz just showed up. Welcome, Oz. So anyway, I'm going to do another slinging up some more information here. I'm just trying to think of where's that darn song I wanted to play my next track, because I know what I want to play. I don't want to play the song with the girl's name on it. Oh, you know, we do got to play, though, for good old Mike Magic. King of the Road. Can't go wrong with that. Oh, yeah, we ain't even talk about the right to carry issue. You know what, that's a bunch of crap. Because this states, we are the only one now in the entire 50 that can't carry. That is bull crap. And dig this. So on Facebook, because now you just hit another sensitive button. I don't care if we jump off subject from real estate or not. Because we can do that here. So anyway, yeah. So now that we're the only out of all 50 that can't carry, somebody, whoever took the state to court, sued them, charged the state of Illinois $399,000, right? $399,000 came out of the state's pocket for violations that went to the the Constitution for the right to bear arms. Which number is it? Number two. Anyway, there's that organization out of Washington. No, well, yeah, out of Washington, the Second Amendment. Yeah, this Second Amendment organization out of Washington sues the state of Illinois for $399,000. Now, where did that $399,000 come from? I got to imagine it had to come out of the taxpayer's pocketbook. So we basically paid the state of Washington or the Second Amendment organization, which did us obviously no damn good whatsoever, give them jerkwads $399,000 to get us nowhere really fast and come out of taxpayers' dollars. How much sense does that make? I mean, seriously. You know, they showed the check that drafted out of Chicago out of Chase Bank or whatever. Yeah, I think it was Chase Bank out of Chicago. $399,000 check. And for what? Because sticking us in the rear end isn't enough. They won't even take you to damn dinner to a movie. But then let alone go and flaunt the check all over the internet and ha, ha, ha. Oh, yeah, we got sued for it, so here's the check, and we're going to send it off now. But you're still not getting to carry, so not only are you not getting to carry, we took your tax dollars to go and pay for the crap. Man, that burns my ass. That's like just seriously, you know? I mean, talk about getting violated, you know? I mean, I don't know what's worse, you know? Even if they sued within the state, it don't matter because, you know, well, they got sued here, and, you know, it isn't going to matter how you sue them because it's all the schmoes. See, there's a hidden agenda for sure. You know, Obama came out of here, and for some reason, I think they're using the way I've been paying attention, catching from back, you know, from other alternate resources, that there's an agenda for Illinois and a few other states. That we're going to be guinea pig states. And, of course, you know, they decide to use, you know, Illinois one because, you know, that jackass president of ours came from, you know, not all came, but, you know, busted out of Illinois into presidency. So, and that's the thing is there's so many active people about trying to make the difference here and getting the stuff passed here. But it ain't making a difference. I don't care. When it comes to the point in time when they think they're going to take the guns out, you know, I got to get a 45. I actually have my Floyd card. I don't have a gun at this point in time, but I'm going to get one. And when I get it, when they think that it comes to when they're going to eventually show up at our door and take them from us because, you know, they're going to try to pass some bullcrap law or deem them, you know, illegal to possess at some point in time, which I'm sure they will do. It'd be a cold day in hell, you know. It just ain't going to happen. I mean, my roommate's got one, and for Pete's sake, you know, well, Coldy and Hell, I let them take his. So they're not taking mine. I'll go down fighting. They'll have to shoot me first before they take it. So, they've got, an Illinois carry, organization here, apparently, or a couple different types of organizations, but just one main one. I forgot the name of it. But they ultimately, it's just going round and round. Now there's another session coming up for vote on us getting to carry and all that jazz and blah, blah, blah real soon. But I'm not holding my breath, at all. Not for anything. I'm just totally, I want to believe that it will pass, but I'm not going to even remotely believe that it will, So, but good old Illinois. I mean, they're just pulling all kinds of crap over here, that's for sure. So, when you were saying, Dwayne, or your comment about, me living up here. Yeah, I feel it. Definitely. I feel it every day. Considering here, I pay 33% of my, I pay 33% in taxes here. 33% of my check goes to taxes before I even get it. 33%. I mean, seriously, So anyway, I'm going to, well, there was Ron and there goes Ron. So, he is here. Hey, Ron, how you doing? So 33%. Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous. And to what? For them to, stick it to us. And now they're talking about raising our taxes again in property. A few hundred bucks because they're trying to say locally in the county that they're losing their butt, property value depreciation due to the Wall Street issue and so on and blah, 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 which is a crock of crap because the last 3 years, my property tax has gone up a couple hundred bucks. I've been griped about that since day one. So it's, been just really insane. So anyway, hey, Ron, thanks for showing up. Better late than never. So anyway, we were just having a chat about the good old wonderful people in Illinois and the lack of right to carry here, which I feel really great considering how, we're the only one that can't carry anything except a lighter in your pocket. Pretty soon that'll be illegal. But anyhow. No internet at the house you are renting. Uh-oh. Well. Oh, yeah. Are you going to... hey, if you get a chance to, Ron, if you see Frank, give him my phone number if you still have it, by the way, because I missed the butthead. I haven't been able to bash Wall Street and Wall Street and the market for a while, and nobody to rip them up with me. So, would be good to hear from the old boy again and all that stuff. Just catching up on some things and seeing how he's doing anyway. Sure would be swell. So pass him my number because his cell phone expired, so I couldn't find him. So if you do happen to get to see him, that would be really swell. And I lost his house number. I had that too. I can't figure out where the heck of me for life bed went to. I'm a train wreck over here. I'd lose my butt if it wasn't attached to me. So anyway, one of the parts for California law, and this is kind of generally, I got a whole bunch of really great, actually I'm not sure how much UCC stuff violation I have, but Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got more than I thought I did. All right. So, I'm going to try to not repeat. Yeah, okay. So, I'm good to go here. So, I want to run through some of these sections, basically, and some various laws for Uniform Commercial Code, that wonderful UCC that's supposed to protect us. And then we'll spit out another tune here, because, you know, you can't just play music and at least not hear Roger Miller anyway. So this has to do with fraud and the factum. I'm going to start, you know, factum. Speaking of factum, I'm going to start learning Latin, I think, just because sometimes it sounds really cool. I mean, it ain't like you got enough free time to, if I'm going to learn anything else, might as well learn a lot of the language, I guess. Might be able to pick up some things that they're slinging all over the government and fraudulent laws with. Yep. Yeah, I know. 1933. Ron posted in the chat room, UCC replaced the NIL circa 1933 or 34. Yep, most definitely. So, fraud in the factum. It's more like fraud in your rear end. But anyway, fraud in the factum is a type of fraud where misrepresentation causes one to enter into a transaction without accurately realizing the risks, duties, or obligations incurred. Black's Law Dictionary, Second Pocket Edition, 2001, page 293. This can be when the maker or drawer of a negotiable instrument, such as a promissory note or check, is induced to sign the instrument without a reasonable opportunity to learn of its fraudulent character or essential terms. Determination of whether an act constitutes fraud in the factum depends upon consideration of all relevant factors. Fraud in the factum usually voids the instrument under the state law and is a real defense against even a holder in due course. So, you prove fraud, you just may be able to escape your contract. Which now runs into, or could be used, other various sorts of, aside from, again, escaping from the note, an obligation of a debt on your mortgage, because you'd sue them to seek damages. Club them within RICO statute violations. So anyway, so UCC 3-309, enforcement of lost note, destroyed, or stolen instruments. Enforcement of lost, destroyed, or stolen instrument. Section A. A person not in possession of an instrument is entitled to enforce the instrument if 1. The person was in possession of the instrument and entitled to enforce it when loss of possession occurred. 2. The loss of possession was not the result of a transfer by person or a lawful seizure. And 3. The person cannot reasonably obtain possession of the instrument because the instrument was destroyed, its whereabouts cannot be determined, or it is in the wrongful possession of an unknown person or a person that cannot be found or is not amenable to service of process. And then B, a person seeking enforcement of an instrument under subsection A must prove the terms of the instrument and the person's right to enforce the instrument. And then there's supporting case law for that where the complaining party cannot prove the existence of a note, then there is no note, which kind of, I have some case law here, which is Pacific Concrete versus Kawanu. I can't even pronounce it. I believe that's Hawaii or something weird. And then GE Capital Hawaii Incorporated versus Yona Yonanaka and Fuchs versus Norwich Housing Authority, which is really weird. Some of these names. And then Solon versus Godball. You know, where they get these names from, man? This is just killing me. Good grief. Yeah, it might as well be Yoko Ono. Man, which is also an attachment. I guess their subsidiary is Solon versus Goble. We'll call it Goble. which is an affiliate of Staff Mortgage and Investment Corp. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, the only notice sufficient to inform all interest parties that a security interest in instruments that has been perfected is actual possession by the security party, his agent, or Bailey. Man. Huh. These are California. Well, those are UCC. That was a UCC violation. Well, fraud and affecting is kind of a general all around federal, universal federal law. Everybody has that. It just kind of worded different all over the place. But anyway, so I have a couple other UCC codes. And then well, you know what? I'm going to run this other half of this section because it has to do with the obligation of possession of the note and so on and blah, blah, blah. So let's beat this one up because it also has to do with California. And since we're slinking California laws, we might as well get our groove on and stay there. So an obligation. Yeah, uniform criminal cabal. That's funny, right? An obligation can exist with or without security. With no security, the obligation is unsecured but still valid. A security interest, however, cannot exist without an underlying existing obligation. It is impossible to define security apart from its relationship to the promise or obligation it secures. Civil cold. So if you got a civil cold, go blow your nose because it ain't my problem. Civil cold. Go get some, what's that stuff that Mike, Magic Mike's? If you got a civil cold, go get some colloidal water. That's what you do. So anyway, Civil Code subsection 2872, 2909, 2920. California mortgages and deed of trust and foreclosure litigation. By Roger Bernhardt, 4th edition, subsection 1.11. No, code is not law. But they want you to think it's law, but it's not law. It's just a code. Statute's not a law. Well, wait. Statute violation. Statutes are laws. Wait, no. Well, okay. A statute couldn't be a law because it's just a statute. It'd have to be titled as a law. Right, exactly. That's what I was going to explain. Is a code or a statute is evidence that a law exists. Exactly. That's kind of where I was going to run. Sorry, you slipped one by me. Okay. Whatever. Anyway, let's see, where were we? Foreclosure litigation, 4th edition, subsection 1-11. The obligation and the security are commonly drafted as separate documents, typically a promissory note and deed of trust. If the creditor transfers the note but not the deed of the trust, the transferee receives a secured note. The security follows the note legally, if not physically. If the transferee is given the deed of trust without the note accompanying it, the transferee has no meaningful rights except the responsibility of the legal action to compel the transfer the note as well, if such was the agreement. In supporting cases, Kelly versus Upshaw. And here's another one of them weird names for you. Yeah, prima facie on its face. Yeah, Palmas versus Palmas versus Trainer, 1866. Wow. Where the mortgage is transferred, only the mortgage. The transaction is a nullity, and his assignee, having received no interest in the underlying debt or obligation, has a worthless piece of paper. Roger Powell on Real Property, subsection 37-27-2 in 2000, which is part of the uniform. Well, I think it's, if I remember correctly, he stripped that out of uniform, like part of the Uniform Commercial Code. Or the Uniform Commercial Cabal. So anyway, I'm going to get Ron on here because I just noticed he called and he's been sitting there for 11 minutes. And I'm sure he's going to have something funny and outrageous to say. So let's see. Hello, Ron. How's it going, bud?
Hey, man. It's going well, Brian. Good to hear your voice, man. Now, you know, if you're looking at case law on those mortgages, you cannot rely on anything that was done prior to 1934.
Oh, right.
Because when they instituted the Uniform Commercial Code, they repealed the NIL, which was the negotiable instrument law, which would have been in effect in that last case you were talking about in the 1860s. And they did that to bring government, the United States contract law, in line with international law. That was the excuse anyway.
Well, right, but the thing is, they're still slinging. If you know, whoever the attorneys are in battling it out in court, if they don't know that, they don't stand.
Right. You know, this is actually one of those issues that everybody's been talking about with the Sharia law here in the U.S. courts. Under the Uniform Commercial Code, the parties of a contract have the right, they can reserve the right to determine what law the contract will be governed by, which is why those two guys down in Florida were having their contract ruled on by a judge under Sharia law. Because they were two Muslims that entered into a contract, and it was under Sharia law that they had the contract.
Right.
So, you know, the judge is kind of forced. I mean, he has no choice. He has to honor their contract.
Right.
But anyway, not to get us too far afield and off track here.
Well, it's not really. I mean, if, you know, you had some jackwad banker that signed you on a mortgage contract or a loan under and stipulated that the loans, you know, any civil actions or lawsuits or any, you know, court action would be taken in the state of, you know, for example, Texas, and state of Texas under Sharia law, then, you know.
Yeah. Well, now, another thing to know that's good to know, like the state of Georgia. Okay, in the state of Georgia, any contract that you enter into in the state of Georgia, Georgia law takes precedent unless it is specifically stipulated otherwise in the contract. I had one of these, you know, I was joined up a Gold's Gym when I was working at a store over here. And after a year of membership, I decided, you know, I wasn't going to go anymore. I got in a car wreck and a big story. But anyway, I quit going, and unbeknownst to me, there was a little clause in the contract or in the paperwork I signed for the membership that it was a revolving account, meaning that they would keep charging me unless I notified them 30 days ahead of time in writing and all this other junk. Well, they kept trying to debit a closed checking account. And the wow. the bank that I was with got bought out by another bank that I had an account with. So they tried tacking all these charges onto my bank account, and I said, whoa, hold on, what is all this junk? So there was an 800 number, and I called it, and then it was some company out of Nevada. So they sent me a nasty gram, and I sent them one back, and I told them that I didn't have a contract with them. My contract was with a local proprietor here in Georgia, and under Uniform Commercial Code, their contract was null and void. Because Georgia law takes precedence, and I wasn't made aware that that clause was in this contract, nor was I made aware that I was contracting with a party that was outside of the state of Georgia. So that was the last I heard of that.
Wow. Club them like a kid. Wow, yeah. I think that's not the only state that has that law.
Well, correct, and that's why I'm saying, you know, when you're going through some of these, you need to make sure to check what the local law is, what the state law is, because some of the states will supersede whatever's in the UCC.
Mm-hmm.
And the state law may be totally different. That's why so many of these jackwads run Delaware corporations, because Delaware's law is so favorable to their game.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, I mean, there isn't, you know, like a trust or anything that I have not seen in where, you know, or the bank is a Delaware corporation because, you know, it will have a subsidiary and that subsidiary is actually the parent company based in Delaware.
You know, that goes back to one of the original Supreme Court cases where, I cannot remember the name of the case now, where one of the banks up in Massachusetts, I believe it was, where the state was going to charge the bank in Delaware taxes because it was a national bank. I forget the whole case now, but anyway, the Supreme Court shot it down and said they couldn't do that. They were trying to put an end to the central bank that was created back in the late 1700s. The state of Massachusetts was.
Well, you know, any way to make a buck, I guess, right? Jerks.
Well, yeah. They knew the central banking system was a scam, and they were trying to put a stop to it. They said, that's fine. We'll just tax the crap out of anybody that's using your commercial paper as money in our state. And the Supreme Court said, nah, you can't do that because it's an excise tax and it has to be uniform and all this junk.
Wow. Some wonderful people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're out to just abuse you. Anything and everything they possibly can. I mean, it doesn't,
the whole purpose of the monetary system is to allow them to fleece people and put them deep into debt. And they think they're prospering with all this debt. And it's like a drug, and people get addicted to it.
Well, yeah, because they're made to, you know,
Oh, don't worry, that, slave. You know, here's a new MasterCard, slave. Go out there and spend.
Right. Here's the new, you know, this is the ultimate, get you everything you want.
Absolutely.
You know? Hence the whole, you know, whole deal with all the wars overseas and the oil and them trying to break the, you know, transactions with the World Bank and all them guys and using, you know, like China using gold that That was just really flipped my lid there, boy. When I that first announcement, you watch now. That I mean, other countries. I mean, China going and using gold to purchase oil. They did that
India,
for a reason.
India did $12.5 billion. Did you see that link I put up the other day? Now this has been going on since 2011, and this is the first time it's been reported in the mainstream media that China has been given a special privilege that they can go direct to Geithner to get treasury bonds without going through the open market committee in the Fed.
Wow.
That's frightening. There's only, I mean, you know, there's a reason you open that door, right? That tells me that the Fed's balance sheet is suspect at the very least.
Man. Wow, that just, yeah, but anyway, now that I'm flip-flopped over that, but I, you know, when India took that, did that transaction with the gold, you watch. Somebody put it, they did that because, you know, at least I think, because, well, it's, they're testing the waters. What are you going to do? So we're going to, you know, go and get their cronies to go buy all this oil with gold. Who's going to do what now? Not a darn thing. So you watch the other countries that are going to follow. Because it's going to be a train wreck.
That's what the BRICS are talking about right now anyway. The BRIC nations got together and they said, look, you know, they're going to develop their own currency.
Yeah, did you see that article I put up about that?
Huh-uh.
Yeah, it's in there. There's an article about that issue on voting out using American currency as a national currency, creating with the BRICS their form of currency.
Yep.
And all that stuff. Yeah, I put it in the blog. It's in there.
Well, I mean, you think about it. The Russians are pretty pissed over their economy and our little soiree over into their, buying their currency and shorting the crap out of it and collapsing their economy.
Yeah.
And of course, the protracted war in Afghanistan didn't help their cause any. And we funded the crap out of the Mujahideen Freedom Fighters. Pardon me, I didn't mean to call them Al-Qaeda, but that's what they are.
Yeah, and now there was a post I seen in my Facebook page from a buddy of mine about how apparently Israel had, it was something to do with the effect of Israel having an open front door access to the Federal Reserve for funds for a war over there.
Oh, well, that wouldn't surprise me in the least bit. You know, all these people that have been suckered into this whole Israel thing just piss me off. And it's just because they don't get it. They've bought into something that, you know, they've been sold a bill of goods, plain and simple.
I got to find that because that was just – I didn't get to pay a whole lot of attention to it because I was trying to – my kid showed up at the last minute, and I was like, man, it was, and when I seen that, I'm thinking, more, you know, what are they, you know, handing money over to Israel for a war or anything to do? We're going to blow them up anyway.
Right, and what money? I mean, what money? Where is this money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
What's its basis?
Yep, I'm looking. Bin Laden, American doctor.
Now I did see a good one today that said the Navy SEALs took care of a Muslim terrorist threat to America. It's time for the voters to take care of another one. But, I mean, you know, to try and lay everything at the feet of Obama is ridiculous. I mean, it's the system, and the system was there before he was born. And it was there before Bush was born. Now, there's no doubt that they're taking part of it. You know, they're in it up to their eyeballs. But I think we really have to focus on the system and not the individuals.
So here's one. House passes House Resolution 4133 binding U.S. to Israel in their war agenda.
Awesome. Well, they
yeah.
better.
So
they
it have, says the USIESC, written by Eric Cantor, claims there is a need to provide Israel with unlimited military and financial aid as a result of the disturbances caused by the Arab Spring.
Huh.
Yeah, here's. I'm going to post that in there, paste in
the chat. Why don't we just get the Israelis to come on over and run the Pentagon for us and be the chiefs of staff?
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're just...
And you know, 80% of our country would stand up and cheer because they think they're supporting, you know, God's chosen people.
Yeah, you know, I don't, I've lost all faith, really. I mean, when it comes to this country anymore, you know, we're the last of the 50 to, you know, NLI to build a concealed carry. Dwayne brought it up earlier. I'm still bent out of shape about that, so being an L. Not bragging that I'm in Illinois, but, you know, being that I'm here and not getting to carry any random, you know, if I felt like walking to the corner because it's, you know, the corner store at, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. to go get a Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, but see, Brian, what you're overlooking is that because you're in Illinois and no one else can carry, you're perfectly safe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I must not have got the memo on that. That's how it works.
See, because, the gun control laws, you know, I mean, the criminals don't break the law.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we paid the $399,000 to, you know, to keep everybody from not carrying so we would be safe because, you know, criminals don't do that.
Right. I mean, break laws, but they certainly don't break gun control laws. You know, that's
right.
That's why so
yeah.
many of them rob, you know, liquor stores and whatnot with ball bats and stuff like that, you know.
Right. Yeah. They actually have, you know, a level of, you know, a line they just won't cross. They've got a little bit of, you know, civility left in them. We won't go there with, you know, carrying guns and shooting people. Well, we might shank you, but we won't shoot you.
Right. You know, I had this conversation with one of the illustrious hosts from WLS. Oh God, it's been over 20 years ago. And he was really touting gun control. And I was on hold for damn near an hour. I had 42 miles to drive home. And when I pulled in my driveway, he picked up and answered my call. And he was, you know, Cook County, Illinois. I said, so you're of the mind that gun control works and it would work better if we had more of it. And he said, absolutely. I said, well, you know, obviously in Cook County, Illinois, it's illegal to even think about possessing a firearm, even if it's in your home. So by your logic, you're telling me that no one died of a gunshot wound in Cook County unless it was inflicted by a policeman. And he hung up on me. Because the logic fails at that very moment, you know.
Yeah.
They
right,
make all
yeah.
these bullshit arguments, but they
right.
don't hold water.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, well, but, you know... when I got into a few arguments about that same topic with some guys that were at one of the gun a convention, but it was one of our little powwows about getting the right to actually carry, and there was a naysayer there that showed up, and oh, you guys are crazy because guns kill people and blah 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 and all these kind of pretty much in the same mindset as the guy that you had your call with anyway. And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, well, you know, criminals don't obey the law. So as far as they're concerned, there is no law. And, you know, well, in that case, you know, I ended up telling the guy, I stood up and made a comment and I said, hey, since you like to road trip and I like to road trip, why don't we go down on I-90? And I'll stay on I-90, and I'll park my car in the off-ramp, and you go walk through Cabrini Green. And if you can make it through the other side, being a white man with money in your pocket, or not knowing whether you do or don't, if you can make it through without, you know, having come out the other side with Swiss cheese, looking like a hunk of Swiss cheese, or being, you know, robbed by gunpoint at some point in time, I'll take you to dinner. You know,
dude, you challenged him to an Evel Knievel.
Yeah, I was like, you know, so if you're willing to walk through Cabrini Green, the ultimate hood of Chicago, then, you know, and convinced yourself that there are no guns, that these criminals aren't gonna, you know, come and plug you one or possibly rob you at gunpoint, you know, then let's put it to test. He wouldn't go. He said I was crazy because, well, actually, his quote was, somebody might shoot me.
No shit, Sherlock.
Or rob me. Yeah.
But they're not supposed to have guns, so what's up with that? Well, that's what I mean, the Evel Knievel, you know, that used to be the joke back when they were having all the famines over in Ethiopia. They said that Evel Knievel's next stunt was to ride across to Ethiopia with a ham and cheese sandwich strapped to his back. So you challenged him to an Evel Knievel, you know? That's and what you should have told him is, if you're successful, I'll treat you to an Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
And an Abe Lincoln's where you take him out for a little dinner, a little theater, and then shoot him in the back of the head.
Yeah, the Abe Club. Anyway, I'm going to read the radio programs off, and we're done for the night, so stop laughing. So,
see, you're never going to get through the lineup.
Anyway, that's just goofy enough. I'm going to laugh for about a half hour after this, of course.
There you go.
But, all right. Anyway, yeah, so I'm going to run through this list of shows in for the Patriot Family Radio and then get rolling and go visit my kids and hang out with them and all that stuff. And then got a gig tomorrow night, so I'm going to go wallop my drums and club the heck out of them. It's a bit stress relief. It's almost therapeutic. What I should do is put pictures of selected political individuals in the heads of my drum. Them.
Although I will say that I thought the Trayvon Martin silhouette targets were in bad taste.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, if I had a son, he'd look just like him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Bullet holes and all.
Oh, we're going to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, hell, we're already there. What are you talking about?
Oh, you know, like my grandpa used to say, I don't want to go to heaven. I'd be with a bunch of strangers anyway.
We passed the River Styx about three decades ago, man.
Oh, mercy. Yeah. That was the one thing that just, I mean, talk about trying to set up a race riot. I mean, seriously. The president would get on there, well, if I had a son, he'd look just like Trayvon. Whatever. Okay? Nobody can have that big of ears. Okay? They're only in the world. And it's him. All right? Dumbo looks at him and probably says, look at the size of that voice. I mean, seriously.
Really? You know, the guy's a nut. I mean, he's just he swivels around. He's like a damn weather vane. I mean, honestly, any way the frickin' wind blows. And mm-hmm. and these people that think that Romney's going to be some kind of an improvement, I got news for them. He isn't any damn better. He's just as cheesy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, how, you know, when you try to choose, you know, the lesser of two evils.
You're still choosing evil, baby.
It's just, you know, it's okay. Well, you know, it becomes black and white.
Metaphorically speaking.
Right.
Well, you know, I heard somebody the other day said that the one question they want to hear a news reporter ask Romney is if he still has his mystical rock and if he can still put it in his hat and see the future. And that goes back to, you know, the days when him and his daddy were traipsing around Mexico. I suspect probably looking for more wives so that when they pass on, they can populate their planet. But, you know, the old story about the beginnings of Mormonism where Joseph Smith found these sacred tablets, gold tablets that were in some kind of hieroglyphics, which I find interesting. That it would be in hieroglyphics, that would be in keeping with the occult, you know, and the esoteric knowledge. And this angel gave him these glasses that he put on so he could read the hieroglyphics. But then when people asked him, well, where are these tablets so we can look at them, he said, oh, well, I lost them. So you mean to tell me that you had these solid gold plates that were inscribed by the hand of God and laid out the future for humanity, and you friggin' lost them? So then he would take his hat, off, and he would put his face in his hat and say he could foresee the future. So, you know, it's like a little Nostradamus trick, a little bowl of water there, you know?
Right, yeah.
And so when Romney was traveling with his father, you know, in their missionary work in South America and Mexico, it was rumored or said that he had found this mystical rock and that he would place it in his hat and look into his hat like Joseph Smith. So I'd like to see a reporter ask him about that one. Of course, 99% of the public wouldn't know what the hell they were talking about.
Right. Watch the reaction the way they got from him. But he'd probably be like, whoa, wait a minute.
Hey, is this your magic rock? Let's put it in your hat and see if you win the election.
See if you see that one coming, right?
Absolutely. Which planet's going to be yours, by the way, Mitt?
Oh, man. All right, so here's the radio program's lineup for the week.
I don't know if the archives will really care.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, yeah, well, you know.
And I won't be on Sunday and Monday, so.
Oh, really? Are you leaving then or going down?
I am leaving tomorrow the moment I get to work. So probably around lunchtime tomorrow, I'll be headed south. Mm-hmm. Hoping we get to pull in down there around 10:30 or 11.
Yeah. It's about a 3-hour drive over there.
Oh, no, it's about a 9-hour drive, 9 or 10-hour drive.
Wait, no, why am I saying 3 hours? What am I smoking? Good grief.
Florida's a long state, you know. It's not real wide, but
yeah,
it's real long.
I don't even know what I was thinking of. Actually, I was thinking of a trip between here and Indiana earlier, and that's why I was nine hours. Yeah, that's. I've had a really off day today anyway, so.
Yeah, that's like you walk softly and carry a big stick, and let me tell you, the president's got a big stick. That was old Joey Biden. You know, that guy is always good for a gas, man. I mean, the guy couldn't get any friggin' dumber than Joe Biden.
Speaking of people in Florida, earlier I was wondering what the heck Robert was up to.
Oh, trust me, I will be stopping in to see the resident Jew.
Because I was like, you know, thinking, he's on here, you know, every other day of the week. Now, what the heck is he doing so important on Friday that he just can't stop in and torture me like he used to?
I think he can only take so much of my punishment. Because
maybe that's what it is. You beat him up so bad the rest of the week, the rest of us can't manhandle him.
Oh, man. I love giving Robert a hard time, and he takes it so well. That's really what makes it so much fun.
Right.
You know, he was talking about being, you know, half Jewish and half Spanish and growing up Catholic, and I said, good Lord. I said, did they throw you out when you tried to throw a goat up on the altar during Mass? I just have this vision of this little guy with a yarmulke coming into the Catholic Mass with a goat over his shoulder.
He has like half a dressing for one religion and one for the other. You know? He's like, I'm trying. I can see him. I'm trying to kill two stones with one bird here, okay? I've only got so many hours during the week to do this.
Say, Brother Robert, how you feeling? Oh, a little torn right now.
I'm
so clumped. Oh, my goodness.
Man. Oy.
But he's a good sport. He's a very good sport. I had a heyday when he was talking about his Polynesian girlfriend and going to their house, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's a pig roast in your future. And sure enough, and he was eating pulled pork. He said, oh, my God, it was amazing. I'm like, Robert, you're a completed Jew now. Oh, man.
I remember when he brought her up, I was just like, what? Wasn't somebody, we brought up something of him and her had a kid?
Yeah, a Junesian or something like that.
Yeah.
Holy cow. Poor guy.
Oh, man. He's got to be a right. No, isn't he? Well, here's the other. Doesn't he have shrink?
Yeah, isn't that frightening?
I was like,
oh, but it gets gets better.
Right.
It's a specific field of psychology that he's in, and that's caring for people that have like, you know, cerebral palsy and that kind of thing. And I said, well, Robert, I'm remiss to even bring this up because I was a little concerned when you mentioned that. Is your girlfriend in a wheelchair?
Because he said something to me with a shrink, and I was like, you're a head mechanic? What?
And, you know, he used to be a court recorder.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, here in Atlanta. No less. I'm like, okay, you know, you're a closet Democrat. Come on, dude, admit it. You're a closet liberal. I mean, we were so standoffish when he first came on the show because I was just waiting for him to go, aha, gotcha. You know, so I'm like,
right. This
guy's got to be a liberal. I mean, he's half Spanish, half Jewish. He's living down in Florida. He worked as a court recorder, and now he's going to school to be a psychologist or psychiatrist. No, everything screams liberal.
Yeah, I remember when he first started coming around, I was like, just, wow, where did this come from?
Yeah, but, and you know what? I'm thrilled that the guy's got enough common sense to be a conservative at least. And he's obviously very bright, you know?
Yeah, he seems to have some cranial kung fu. I mean, I guess other than, you know, I mean, otherwise they probably, unless his daddy bought him a Coliseum for the college, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think that's the case with Robert. I don't think he's on the stipends, you know?
Yeah. So, but anyway, well, bud, I've got to run. It's, the kids are waiting for me. And I'm going to get out of here. And I guess, well, I'll see you probably sometime during the week or next weekend on your show somewhere.
All right, buddy. Good, man.
So,
keep kicking their butts.
Right on. On the day of time.
Have a good week.
Take it easy, bud. You too. See you. Bye.